Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. Well, coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with Michael Tara Garver. She will be talking about her latest show, Faith Healer. We also have an audio review of Faith Healer, and of course, as always, Chicago's theater news. So sit back and relax, and get ready to talk some theater.
You are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guest this week is from one of the top plays in Chicago, from Faith Healer. Our guest is Michael Tara Garver, who is the director of the show and the artistic director of UMA Productions. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Tell me about why you selected Faith Healer.
About 3 years ago, the associate artistic director, John Zinn, brought this play to me. And so I've been reading it for 3 years before the Broadway production even happened. And I just felt like it was one of the most beautiful plays I'd read. And we are constantly looking for plays as a company that creating an environment that encapsulates the audience will give the play a new life. And I really felt like this was a play that was true. And then actually in selecting our season, we realized it was a season about faith. And so the play kind of came to be at the right time.
So Faith Healer is by Brian Friel, who's probably considered the greatest Irish writer living today.
One of them for sure. Yeah.
Definitely. So tell us about the play. Basic storyline is.
The storyline, which is interesting, people kind of continue to reference the Rashomon reference. It's about a faith healer who's Irish, who spent his life traveling around Wales and Scotland with his wife and his manager. And it is a perspective of their life from each of them and how very, very different one can see the truth. And they each see the truth very differently.
And it's a series of monologues, right?
It is. It's challenging because I think I've never been one drawn to monologue plays, but I find that this play is a conversation, even though it is a series of monologues.
It certainly is. And do not let that stop you from coming and seeing it, because it is a great piece of theater and it's a great storytelling piece.
Yeah, I think there's this great history in Irish storytelling that comes through in this play. And at the same time, one of our goals is the way I wanted to produce the play was that it wasn't just three stories, but that it was three conversations with the audience and with their history.
So tell the folks what they can expect when they come. You do a few special things.
Well,
to create the atmosphere, which I thought were cute and they worked.
Thank you very much. We think of faith healing in the U.S. as being intense. In fact, faith healing in Ireland, Wales, Scotland took place in the basements of pubs and meeting houses and bars. So what happens is you actually do check in at the front, at the box office, and then we take groups around through the back alley of the theater, and we've designed the space such that you're coming down through the back, and then you come through this dark, cavernous space and walk towards a lit doorway, and inside you're in a very small room, much like it might have been in a
And this
basement.
Is at Chopin Theater,
right? This is the Chopin Theater, Division in Ashland.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, so now they get there, and we sit down in this intimate space, and the set design, tell us about the set design. I thought it would look like a basement of a pub in Ireland or Scotland.
Well, the idea is Brian Sidney Bembridge, who he and I have collaborated on, I would say, the last six productions I've done, and he and I work very closely together in terms of trying to create the full experience for the audience. So it's not just about the room you walk into, but the rooms that you walk through to get there. And once you walk in the room, that you're fully in what it might have felt like in the basement of a pub. Very small, very intimate, plastered walls, beams. And like many of the meeting houses and basements they would have traveled through.
And it worked. I saw the reaction of the audience the night I saw the play. They were like, "What's this? What's going on here?" They felt they were into something special.
Well, I also think what's been really fascinating is watching people think that they're in an actual room that lives there, that exists in the theater, and that afterwards when they realize that this was all part of the experience, it's kind of an eye-opening thing to realize.
Well, he Bembridge is a terrific set designer.
Yeah.
One of the best in town. Was that your idea?
We collaborate together. Okay. I think he and I have that relationship where on every production we do, I direct shows, especially for Uma, about putting the audience within the play. And because of that, he and I are very much having a conversation.
Well, you did a staging that worked so well in this play. When I saw the Steppenwolf production a number of years ago, Faith Healer, which was a terrific one. And by the way, your show, folks, is every bit as good.
Oh, thank you very
much. In some ways more effective, in particularly what you did with the staging. Rather than having, let's say, when the Faith Healer comes out and starts telling his story, at Steppenwolf they had him with a spotlight on him, and he really never moved. If he moved maybe a foot or two, I think he took a sip of water or whiskey or whatever. But you had him interacting, coming down the aisles, talking almost inches away from the people in the audience. You had him go open the cupboard and drink the whiskey and have just gets you so involved with the story. I was waiting for someone to answer him.
Well, every night we've kind of waited for that to happen. I think, you know, this is a play about these people who went and every night stood in front of strangers and had these healings. And we thought, and in reading the play, one of the things that was really important to me was figuring out how to give the, I think theater in a lot of ways has a similar experience, and how do we connect those experiences, and how do we make the kind of community feeling of being in a theater and in a play and watching a play, you know, healing in itself. So,
and it worked. That was a very smart idea that added to it. Now tell us about the cast, because as I said in my rave review of your show, it is a flawless show, because the set, the atmosphere you created was terrific. The writing, you have one of the great writers. Many people think this is Friel's best play. It's arguably his best play, certainly one of his, you know, two or three best. Now you have to get three top actors to do it. And you did it with a non-equity cast, which, folks, means nothing, because they are as good as anybody, they're professionals, as good as any of the union actors. So tell us about the three characters and how you selected them and what they brought to the production.
Well, Denica Ivancevic, who plays Grace, Frank's wife, she actually is an artistic associate of Uma, and she and I, this is our fourth play working together. Denica is a fantastic actress, and I think one of the things that I really strive to give actors opportunities for is to push themselves to play roles that they're not often getting cast as. Maybe they're typecast as something. And Denica has found that kind of home in Uma. She's gotten the opportunity to play some parts she hasn't often gotten to play. And she and I just really, really focused hard on this role and finding the strength in this character. And she's just exquisite to watch, and she's just taken every leap and bound that the role requires.
Each of the actors have unique accents too.
Yes. Well, the dialect coach, we spent a lot of time talking about the choosing a very specific dialect. It's not just an Irish dialect. It's where in Ireland, Northern Ireland, Southern Ireland.
Name each one. Where is?
Frank is from Southern Ireland, and in fact, he calls Grace English because she's Northern Irish. And it kind of is a dig. The reason he calls her English is because he doesn't actually consider Northern Irish Irish.
Which is true of a lot of the Southern
exactly.
Irish.
Exactly. So then she has a Northern Irish dialect, when in fact in the play there's some conversation about it, because she's referred to by Frank as English. This is how the whole idea of truth in the play gets really interesting.
Well, also, is she the wife or the mistress, depending on
Well, I believe she's the wife. I fully believe she's his wife, but
I do too.
But you know, truth is also, I mean, again, it goes back to what's really true. It's what I believe, so someone else could believe something
and
different.
And Teddy has a Cockney English.
Teddy is from England. He is Cockney, and he brings a whole different energy to the play. And that's played by James Joseph, who is an excellent actor. We worked together on a production a couple years ago, Hannah and Martin, and he actually was cast later in our rehearsal process, and just jumped on board and took on such a really a loved role. It's a role that people just
Brad Armacost won a Jeff Award. Doing, and I'll tell you, Joseph was right there. He was exquisite, and all three of them were very good.
And Chris Hainsworth, who plays Frank, that was our biggest concern when we took this play on, was finding a Frank that I felt like could fill the shoes of that man.
Well, yeah, describe the for our audience the what the faith healer, his persona. Because I agree with you. The casting was terrific.
Well, I think that the important thing about Frank is that you like him. Because I think that he's written, and a lot of the things he's done are maybe not likable things. But I think that ultimately Frank is struggling with how to, like any human being is, how to be the best version of himself. And he happens to not succeed at it very often. And he tends to, you know, hurt his wife and hurt the people around him.
Yeah, he's mean. He likes to drink.
Yeah, he likes to drink. But at the same time, the important thing in casting was finding someone like Chris who ultimately has found the joy in this man as much as the anger and as much as the hurt.
Well, Chris has the charm. He has that Irish charm to him.
Mm-hmm.
And the little twinkle in his eye.
Exactly. As they describe about Frank. Yeah.
And he's got the look, too. He's a big, tall guy.
Right.
And the beard helped.
Yeah.
He's got that. He's got the map of Ireland written all over him.
But then what I think Chris really brings to it also is this incredible depth that Frank has of pain and self-torment.
Yes.
And Chris has really taken that and run with it in a way that is really challenging to do in such an intimate space.
Well, folks, when Frank walks in and starts talking, it's like he's doing a litany when he starts chanting, as they all do when they start chanting. Tell us about
Aberaeron. Yeah. Aberaeron.
They're chanting the names of these
Welsh villages.
Right? Yeah.
Welsh and Scottish villages. Frank, in the story, you learn that Frank, before every performance, what he would do kind of as his way to pump himself up was sit in the back, drinking whiskey, chanting these Welsh and Scottish villages like a mantra almost. They're the villages that they used to travel around. So he was kind of using an incantation of all of these villages that they went through. And the names of these villages are just, I can't even try. I mean, I can do some of them, but they're very difficult. And I know I'll butcher them. And then Grace actually takes some of those on as ways to calm herself. So it's a really interesting device in the play.
Yes, it's brilliant. And again, it's a testimony to the actors to be able to get through it. I mean, the opening monologue is what? How long is that? Like 35, 40 minutes?
Frank's is actually about 25 minutes.
Oh, it's 25, okay.
The longest one is Teddy's. His is 40 minutes.
His is 40, okay.
And again, this may sound incredibly, not as appealing, but I mean, it's written so well. As I said, I'm not a fan of monologue plays normally, and I just don't think this is a monologue play. I think that's what constructs it, but I think it's a conversation in a really beautiful way.
You get so wrapped up into the writing and the delivery, and that's the key. I mean, I could see a faith healer in the hands of people who aren't of the caliber of arts of your group. And just, it'd be a long evening.
It's a tough play. And I think we took it on knowing that. And, you know, as a company, something we've really, especially as a director, something we really pride ourselves on doing is taking on challenges and doing what it takes to hopefully achieve
those
challenges.
Well, congratulations, because not only me, almost all the reviewers in town have really been raving the show.
Well, we're really.
You were Jeff recommended?
Yes, we were. We were Jeff
and
recommended.
And I can tell you, Irish plays are, the Jeff Committee is really tough on some of the Irish plays.
Well, it's a tough thing, you know. You don't want to also, at the same token, you want to honor that it is an Irish play and what it's about and where it comes from, but you also want to make it accessible to an audience that isn't Irish. I mean, we're...
Oh, you don't have to be.
Yeah, exactly. It's a story that is completely
Every actor in town should come see this show just to see what it is to deliver long monologues and engage the audience. I mean, everybody was on the edge of their chair because there's a mystery element. Is he a charlatan?
Right.
Is he real?
Yeah. I mean, there's the whole thing, even the end, I think the important thing of this piece is that it's all a question. There's no, I mean, I have my opinions about what I think the answers are, but that's not the point. It really should be a question.
And is it really that they cured themselves?
Mm-hmm. Or is it that the fact that all these people that they traveled for, all the audiences, much like the audiences that come to this show, are they the healers? Are they the people who had the ability and the strength to heal these three people? So,
and I had somebody who saw the show ask me, said, why were they talking? Because of what, I don't want to give away the ending, but what could have happened at the end, was this a dream? That's an interesting question.
Well, again, I have my perspective on it. And one of the big concepts that both myself and Brian talked about in terms of the design is about how you get to the space and the idea that there's a room within a room, the kind of not specificity of the room outside of the room you go into. And some really, you know, we had a lot of really the whole design team. I mean, Allison Seipel with costume. I mean, I know.
Yeah, the costumes.
The
are
costumes
very accurate,
and Jesse Klug, who did our lighting, which in a space like that, we focused. I mean, it's really hard to do such specific lighting, and he and I worked together to kind of create that.
And that was terrific.
He does fantastic work. I mean, everyone, Scotty Zeri, who did the sound design. It's
how about the poster? The big sign that says "Fantastic Frank Hardy." How did you get that look? Because it looked like it was like 20, 30 years old.
That's Laura Musard. She's our properties designer. And she just, I mean, she worked hard on it. And it was that was the centerpiece. I mean.
Yeah, that's very, because they keep taking it down and putting it up. Yeah.
Well, and you know, with props, it's such an interesting thing in this piece because there's a couple very specific ones. I mean, it gets to, even to the point where, whether you know this or not, when he comes in at the end, he's wearing different clothes that smell of whiskey. You know, the bottle is now, I mean, so that all the details, everything like that, you can smell maybe a little bit of whiskey in the air just because we scent designed it, the whole thing, because it's so
intimate. I didn't smell it. I don't have a great sense of smell, but a couple people told me maybe he really was drinking.
He doesn't drink off stage.
I don't know if you're aware of it, but when Brad Armacost did it, the day I saw it, he was drinking Guinness Stout, and they were real Guinness Stouts because they were opening up, you know, how they foam over.
Yep.
And he drank, in that monologue, he drank three of them.
Well,
and I don't know, and that was an afternoon. I don't know how he did it the night performance.
I mean, it's, you know, we actually, Chris and I held one rehearsal on a whim. We have a sponsorship with Johnny O'Hagan's. It's a bar in town, and we went and rehearsed one night in the basement of that bar. It's an Irish pub in town.
Yeah, sure.
And it was a great thing to do. There was music playing upstairs, like a band was upstairs playing Irish music, and he and I in the basement rehearsing. And, you know, so you do a little bit of that to kind of get the feeling and what it was like.
Well, folks, if you want to see one of the top productions in town of a great play, I mean, congratulations
Thank
on
you
it.
Very
because
much.
To take on one of, most people consider it one of the great plays of the 20th century, and to do the kind of production you did, you got to be proud of it.
I'm very proud. I'm proud of these three actors, and we've had a crazy journey together. So,
how long was the rehearsal process?
We started rehearsing at the beginning of November, but then, of course, we had two breaks because of Thanksgiving, Christmas, and it was a fascinating rehearsal process because it was just me and one of them in a room for hours, and then me and someone else in the room. So they actually didn't get to spend much time together until we've actually come to the theater, which is very different. Normally, you have a cast kind of creating a community together, and so this was in the same way. You had to isolate them because it's an isolating play. It's just really interesting. So they're enjoying being together now. You know, they're a great group of people.
Yeah, and you would be hard-pressed to find three better performances. Each in their way knocked you. I mean, Chris at the beginning, wow, he grabs you in.
Yeah.
And then she comes in.
Denise,
and
breaks your heart.
she does break. And she was so believable.
Well, I think all three of them have – one of the biggest things for us is, you know, the difference between doing an intimate version of this play versus, I mean, it was just on Broadway last season with a very successful production of it. So when you're on Broadway, you have this huge house, and therefore the parts are being played very differently because you're creating that for an entire audience.
Yeah,
for
you
us,
have to project that out.
Right.
Yeah.
For this, it was, these couldn't be, you know, not to say that this is how they did on Broadway, these had to be very real portrayals of these people, and it had to feel very real, and it couldn't at all feel like a stereotype, or, you know, especially James with the Cockney, and, you know, you had to feel like this real guy. And
the humor in that part, folks, you want to hear one of the funniest bits, what he does with the, it's talking about the dogs.
Well, this manager, basically, prior to managing Frank, he had managed, I don't want to give anything away, but he'd managed a dog and a woman who, you know, led pigeons around, and, you know, he'd had some really fantastic acts prior to Frank. So he tells these stories about these people that,
and just
know,
the way he says fantastic.
Yeah. That's his line. Fantastic. Yeah.
It was really funny.
He does a great job. James, all three of them do.
So now let's put a little commercial in for it. Give us the days you're running, you know, a little commercial, a little phone number, where it's at.
Well, Faith Healer, it's running through February 10th. We run Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m., and then on Sundays at 3 p.m., and I say that specifically because we have no late seating because of the kind of show it is. You can call 773-347-1375, and it's at the Chopin Theater.
Say it one more time, the radio rule of twice.
773-347-1375, or you can go to www.com. UMA Productions, umaproductions.org. And we also have one Monday night performance, the 29th of January at 7:30 p.m.
Okay, and that's industrial night?
Yeah, that's an industry night, yes.
And that's a $5
ticket? $5
ticket,
yeah. The tickets normally, Thursdays and Sundays are $15, and Fridays and Saturdays
wow,
are $20.
That's a that really is a bargain for a play like this.
Yeah, so it's a great evening, and it's, again, you know, it's a whole experience, and
well,
Chopin Theater.
Folks, if you think you're an actor, or you think you're a director, come and see this play and to see what it's really all about.
Oh, thank
because
you.
Because if you can do Irish accents, if you can do 25 to 40-minute monologues and tell a tremendous story and grab your audience like this play does, then you're an actor.
Well, I think all three of these people prove that, you know, all three of these
all right,
actors.
Let's go on now about a little about yourself and UMA Productions and some of the plays you've done because you have quite a nice background. You're a Northwestern grad.
I am a Northwestern graduate. I graduated in 2000. So I've been in Chicago. I left Chicago briefly, and I assisted a director named Martha Clark out at American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco, and then moved back here and founded UMA Productions. It was originally UMA Lenier Productions, which is a little bit of history, and then we shortened it because no one could pronounce it.
Okay.
So now it's UMA Productions.
Good practical idea.
Exactly.
Tell us some of the plays you're proudest of. I've seen several of them. The Violet Hour was excellent.
We did Violet Hour. That was our last production, and I'm a huge fan of Richard Greenberg.
Yes, I am too.
Our first production was actually the show we were founded on was a play we called Moment, and it was an adaptation of 3 Days of Rain and The Author's Voice in one play,
wow.
which are both by Richard Greenberg. And it was a really, that was our first, that's what kind of brought a lot of the people who have made up UMA together. The lead in that, John Zinn, who was in The Violet Hour, was in The Pool Bethesda.
Yes, I
is
know
an
he's
excellent
yes,
actor.
He really is.
And he's our associate artistic director. That's how we met, was doing Moment together. And, so it's really been a Richard Greenberg has been kind of the thing that we stick to. And then so Violet Hour was a great experience. It was just a really tough play. I had a great cast.
Again, you got guts because Steppenwolf did it and did a nice production of it. And I went to see yours and I brought a friend of mine who didn't see the other one. And he loved it. And I said, you know, trust me on this. What you just saw was as good as the Steppenwolf production.
I think the thing that we have, or at least, you know, myself as a director and what I've brought and why this company was created was this idea of, you know, Steppenwolf's been nothing but supportive of us because I don't think we were in any way trying to, the way we were looking at the play was a very different way than they're able to look at that play. We're looking at how can you create an environment that makes an audience a part of the conversation without shaking them and saying, talk to me, but really design-wise, staging-wise, everything.
Well, you did that. You did it in the round, or actually in the square,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we were right on top. In fact, some of the papers come flying out. We're
exactly.
Going right over my shoulder. And I like that. That's and very intimate.
Everything about it, the staging, is all very specific in that idea of how do you make an audience the last piece of the ensemble.
So that's a trademark that you believe in?
Definitely. I think it creates, you know, theater, we talk about it all the time. You know, in UMA, you talk about it with other theater artists. How do you grab and create a new theater audience? And I think one of the ways of doing that is defining space in a completely new way and defining what it means to be an audience in a new way.
I agree, and you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
All the plays I see, you know, when I go to a lot of opening nights, I'm in my 60s and I'm like the average age. But I go to your plays and I'm the grandfather.
Well, we
have
a range, I think.
Yeah.
We get,
but you're getting the younger audience.
We are. I mean, I think the thing that's been interesting with this play in particular, with Faith Healer, is we've had a full range. Violet Hour, the same thing. You know, I think we're also a group of a range. I mean, 20s and 30s, our artists are in their 20s and 30s, but we're not doing plays that are just about 20-year-olds. We're doing, so we get a good, you know, our board ranges from all ages, too, so we get a good.
Are you getting the Irish audience?
We've gotten a little bit of it this time,
that's
yeah,
good.
Which is nice, especially for Faith Healer, you know.
Well, you know, they're notorious for coming toward the end of a run.
Exactly.
That's what Irish rep has told me. I asked them that one time. They said, yeah, they all come right at the end. And sometimes we actually have to extend it.
Yeah. Well, you know, with this, we're really excited just because the audience, I think, has been a little bit different, a little bit broader. So it's really nice
good.
To see.
So what is the future for you and for the theater company? What do you have coming up?
We, in the spring, are doing a play called Orange, Lemon, Egg, Canary. It is.
Oh, what, say that again?
Orange, Lemon, Egg, Canary. It
okay.
is the Midwest premiere of a play by Rennie Groff. who it was premiered at the Humana Festival, and then it was just done off-Broadway. We're the first production since the off-Broadway production.
And so it's a Midwest Chicago premiere then.
Mm-hmm. And it we were fighting for it, and we got the premiere of it, which has been great. It's a fascinating play about a magician and his lovers. So it's a whole other conversation on faith, about faith in love and faith in magic.
You have somebody who's really strong at magic?
Dennis Watkins. Who,
oh, I know Dennis. Sure.
Yeah, who is a house company member.
Yes,
he's actually playing the lead in the play. And we originally had hired him as our magician's consultant.
He's a terrific man. Did you see him do when he did Houdini, when they put him upside down?
I didn't see it, but I have heard.
And I was 2 feet away, and I still came. I've got to ask him. We have a podcast interview coming up with him. I'm still trying to get the secret to that, of how they did
it. Well, he will never give away his secrets.
I know he won't, but it was brilliant. And we were looking for it.
Well, you know, and the thing is, too, with this show, with Orange Lemon, there's just so much magic that when I first read it, I thought, oh, you've got to do this really well to make this play work. Because the magic is intense in this show. And
great. So everyone loves magic.
Yeah, it's fun. And that's what the whole play's about, is that there's this kind of, everyone's always trying to guess with magic. How did it work? How does it work? And that you never know makes it exciting.
Wow, that's a great idea.
And that'll be at the Chopin Theater in it opens in April, runs
in
through
April,
May.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Where do you see yourself and your theater company 5 years from now?
5 years from now, I would hope that, where I see us is that I think we're really establishing ourselves as this environment, creating these environments for new plays. And one of the things I'm really excited about that we've been doing is the premieres of plays and starting to work with some more playwrights. And so in 5 years, we're not a company that really wants to have a set space. We've been at the Chopin in residence and we like being here. But because of the idea of creating new environments, we want to have a home where we're rehearsing, but not necessarily that you're always coming to the same theater.
You don't mind being an itinerant theater, because that way you can get the space that fits to what you're doing.
Exactly.
But you're going to keep the spaces where you can be intimate with and
exactly.
Have the audience
That's
interact.
Part of what I think
Boy, keep that
we're
up.
Continuing to do.
I love it, and I think real theatergoers love that concept. Because, it's nice to see the big downtown shows, but, you're sitting with 3,000 people, and the stage is, miles away, even though you can see everything. But there's nothing like the intimacy.
Well, in Chicago, there's nothing. I mean, I'm not from Chicago, and I stay here purely because Chicago theater allows great theater to happen in spaces like that. It allows spaces like the Chopin Theater. The people who run this theater are fantastic and supportive. And there are spaces all around town that are not a normal theater space. And it allows theater to have a whole different life.
I agree, because I get to most of the places.
Yeah.
Well, so that's what you want to keep doing.
Yeah, we want to definitely continue to be itinerant. And we want to continue to challenge ourselves to figure out how to change the environment of what you imagine a theater space to be.
You've already produced a terrific amount of work. And,
Thank you so much.
And this, I don't know if this is the best play you've done, but it certainly is right up there.
Well, thank you. We're very proud of it.
And so once more, it's Faith Healer, and it's running till February 10th.
Correct.
Thank you so much. This has been terrific. And
thank you.
Folks, make sure you get out to see Faith Healer and that you go see a play this week. Thank you.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another egressed episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of January 22nd, 2007. The 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee will be hosting its final competition on Sunday, March 25th. The show will be closing after a full year of a successful run here in the Windy City. The Tony Award-winning musical, which opened back on March 28th of last year, will be closing its doors after over 400 performances. Producer David Stone did say that it was a difficult decision, but he wanted to end the run on a high note. The show was, in fact, very successful, recouping its initial investment after only a matter of weeks here in Chicago. Our sit-down production has experienced a longer engagement than any other production of Spelling Bee outside of New York City. So again, Spelling Bee will be closing its doors on March 25th at Chicago's Drury Lane Theater at Water Tower Place, which means there's only a limited number of tickets available. So if you've already seen the show, get out there and see it again. And if you haven't, you better get out and see it soon. Writers Theater is continuing its 15th season with Itmar Moses' highly acclaimed Bach at Leipzig. The show is directed by Nick Bowling, who is the founding artistic director of Timeline Theater Company, and this marks his directorial debut with Writers Theater. Bach at Leipzig is written by one of the nation's foremost young playwrights and takes place in Germany in 1722. The show will be running through April 1st at Writers Theater in Glencoe. For more information, you can click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Black Ensemble Theater's holiday production, Those Sensational Soulful 60s, has become such a hit that it is now turning into an open run at the Black Orchid. The show was meant just for the holidays, but demand has been so big that Black Ensemble has decided to extend the production, which unfortunately will be rearranging some of its other shows. So, Don't Shed a Tear, the story of Billie Holiday, will now be running through February 11th. And their next show, Memphis Soul Stew, the story of Stax Records, will now be opening on March 11th. This is a minor change to what we had announced previously last week, and that only means good news for Black Ensemble Theater. Broadway star Linda Etter will be returning to Chicago for one, and I repeat, one night only, and that night will be Saturday, March 3rd at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Etter will be performing a concert full of hits from her latest CD, By Myself, The Songs of Judy Garland. Tickets will be available to the general public starting on Friday, January 26th, so make sure you get your tickets soon. Prices will range from $40 to $80. For more information, stay tuned right here to Talk Theater in Chicago's News Podcast. Well, thank you very much for listening to this egressed episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare quote of the week. The following quote comes from The Tragedy of Macbeth, King of Scotland, Act 5, Scene 1. This disease is beyond my practice. Well, we can't thank you enough for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready to stick in your ears. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
You're listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago Review Podcast. The Faith Healer by Brian Friel. Produced by Uma Productions at Chopin Theater. Review by Tom Williams. Uma Productions has one of those shows going that demonstrates that Chicago storefront troupes can and do produce wonderful theater. Their outstanding production of Irish master playwright Brian Friel's Faith Healer is a flawless work. In order to land this difficult work successfully, one needs three talented actors, each skilled in accents, who can sustain long monologues conveying both the depth of the character as well as their character's personality. Under Michael Tara Garver's tight direction set upon Brian Sidney Bembridge's intimate basement set, with Eva Brenneman's dialect coaching, this production of Faith Healer astonishes us with its emotional wallop. Friel's 1979 drama had a successful remount on Broadway last year with Ralph Fiennes, Ian McDiarmid, and Cherry Jones. Uma Productions equals the power and depth of that production. Faith Healer is a memory play told in a series of monologues by three people, each of whom tell essentially the same story from their point of view. First, Frank Hardy, the itinerant Faith Healer, played with gusto and charm by Chris Hainsworth, tells his story revealing his arrogance, angst, and bewilderment. He is a moody, hard-drinking, troubled performer who is part charlatan, part entertainer, and sometimes actually a healer. Told in vivid, often lyrical language, we take to the charismatic Faith Healer, as we start to wonder if he'll cure us of our own ailments. Hainsworth quickly captures us with his honest, profound performance. His monologue titillates as it creates enough mystery to compel us to wonder what happens next. Next, we meet Grace, played by Danica Ivansevic, who is either Hardy's wife or mistress, depending whom you believe, as she tells her story of the events that happened first in Wales, then in northern Scotland. In a moving performance, Ivansevic conveys both her love and her fixation with the moody and often cruel relationship she had with the healer. By now, we are hooked with the mystery of the power of the healer. Did he really heal 10 people in one town? And what happened in the misty Scottish town to Grace's stillborn? Teddy, the devoted vaudevillian manager, played with terrific intense humor and fine Cockney accent by James William Joseph, carries the story to another level as he describes both the faith healer and Grace's relationship, and the strange events in Wales, Scotland, and finally in the rejuvenating return to Ireland. He refers to the healer as fantastic. This is a gem of a play. It has flawless, perfect accents, excellent storytelling through vividly stirring solo work that lands Friel's marvelous language deftly. All you have to do is listen closely at the start and soon you'll be hooked. The action of the story will keep you engaged. The mystery unfolds with a rich blend of humor, pathos, and bewilderment. Do not think that because there is no interaction between the actors, this play is boring. Quite the contrary. Faith Healer will have you on the edge of your chair in wonderment. You'd be hard-pressed to find 3 finer performances than witnessed at Chopin Theater in this wrenching tale. Kudos to Uma Productions for mounting a delightful theatrical experience. Highly recommended. The Faith Healer by Brian Friel, produced by Uma Productions at Chopin Theater in downtown Chicago, located at 1543 West Division Avenue. Now running through February 10th. For tickets and more information, call 773-347-1375. Call 773-347-1375.
Well, thank you very much for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Michael Tara Garver for giving us the honor of interviewing her this week. Also, I would like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer, without whom this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you for listening. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode, ready for your listening pleasure. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Mote, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.